Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties, bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a recipe or a question, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about problem solving. And you know, I suppose we do talk about problem solving all the time on this show, but let's talk about it specifically so we can think about the various problems that we commonly encounter when we're doing or when negotiation and alternative dispute resolution, an arbitration, a workshop, a seminar, whatever it is that we're doing that we need to get people together to reach a common goal, to reach consensus, and to reach understanding. So, what types of problems do we commonly encounter within that context, within the context of whatever we're doing to reach, well, to reach accord and to get to a successful outcome? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have lots of people. Thank you very much for all being here. Yay. You know what? I think we've got some agreement. And I think perhaps the first type of problem that we commonly see is what I'm going to call lack of participant compliance. Yeah. You've got a whole bunch of people, and they're there, right? And they look like a group. They've got no group dynamic, and they're not being compliant. They're not cooperating. Mm-hmm. Charles and others are saying that they're not willing to put in the required effort. Yeah, they're not really willing to really do what needs to be done. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are talking about, pardon me, my goodness, my voice is going. This is a live show, isn't it? Hang on one second. I'm going to take a sip of water. Thank you. Sorry about that. My goodness. Hello. And a lot of people, Sonia and others, are talking about that they're not willing to put in any kind of funding, right? Sometimes something takes everybody doing some fundraising, right? Might even be past the hat, might even ask people to put in as participants and to maybe ask them if they can find some funding sources, right? Or we might hold a fundraiser, which I must confess is kind of organizationally and like that a pain, right? Mm-hmm, yeah, and they have to be willing to help. And the other type of participant non-compliance, lack of participant compliance, that they're not willing to put in the required time. Yeah, the required time. And what should we, now as we go along, let's talk about what we should do about these things. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, and Reinhardt and others are saying that you need to make it clear what's necessary. And thank you. Yes, it means that you've been here a while. That's very important. At the very beginning of any kind of a negotiation, even a workshop and a seminar and like that, I actually lay out right up front, real directly, what's going to be needed to the best of my knowledge at that time, because after all, it's the beginning, right? But I like to give it big. Does that make sense? And not say, well, it's not going to take too long and we're going to get this done and the world will change. No, I like to tell people about that we're going to need to meet regularly and that it's going to take really some effort and some time. And if it's going to take funding, and we know it from the beginning, right, if it's something that's going to need to really have, I don't know, some sort of marketing funds, some sort of research funds and like that. If it's going to be substantial, more than just let's all throw in $20, if it's going to be substantial, we've got an idea of it from our experience, and you can make it as a may, but people should know that it's going to, there's going to be some funding, there's going to be some time, and there's going to be some effort. Mm-hmm. And that's when they should know if they're up for it. Because some people really aren't. They are busy. They are distracted. They're out of town a lot. Well, even out of town, I mean, Skype and like that exists. That doesn't count. But for some reason, when they get into it, and they're standing there, and they're looking at it, they go, oh, I didn't know there was so much involved. You might as well know up front, right? You might as well know that they can't right up front, because otherwise it's just going to fail and they're going to drop out midway, or they're not going to put in the time, the effort, or the funds, but you're going to count on them to do it. Right? Yeah. I'm very big on being upfront about that. I like to explain the process and explain what in my experience could be the maximum, right? Yeah. Because it's better for people to know that they're really not in it for the long haul than to have them sit there and be a nasty surprise later on. Because nobody told him it was going to take that long, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm very big on being transparent, right? And if somebody wants to leave at that point, they're easily replaced. Yeah, they really are. And you've left as friends, right? Nobody's been mad at anybody. And if they are essential later on, they can be called in as kind of an expert or a consultant or something. And they don't have to do they don't have to put in the long-term effort. They just need to, when you get to their point, you call them and say, you know, I know you're still interested in the outcome. Could you, fill in the blank, make a phone call, have some sort of influence that we need, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, it's a good point. In fact, I've done this in my day. Sometimes you have an ongoing issue, something that's taking a while, and it needs funding eventually. There's like a fundraiser or something like that. And sometimes the person who was there at the beginning went, oh, my God, I can't, not too busy. They didn't want to put in the time and effort to get to that point because they couldn't, they wouldn't, whatever. But they can be a fantastic sponsor for the fundraiser. And you haven't made them mad by having to dismiss them and telling them that they're not adequate, because you said up front how much time and effort and funds. But for some people, funds is the easy part, right? They've got a big corporation or something, and they can just give to a good cause. Yeah. They're sometimes the best fund sponsors, the best sponsors. And that's when you get the word honorary chairperson, right? Yeah. Honorary chairperson means that you're important. You've got quite a bit of clout. You might have given quite a bit of money, but you might have given quite a bit of clout in some way. But you've given something big time, but not your time and effort. So you're honorary. And people love that. They get there. Yeah, you see, yes, it is true. You guys have seen me do that several times. They get their picture in all the publications, right? All the advertising. They get to be on the stage and make a little speech, right? But they didn't have to do the grub work, but that's okay because we're great friends. And sometimes that's someone's ability. That's someone's thing to offer, and it's not to be sneezed at. That's a fabulous thing. If you have somebody who's willing to sponsor, go, yes, be an honorary chairperson. Yeah. What other kind of problems, now that we've discussed honorary chair people, what other types of problems do we commonly see? I'm going to call this, people are calling it bigotry. No, I'm going to call this strong preconceived notions that need to be overcome. How's that? Such a nicer word. Yes, I know. Yes, we've got quite a few people. We've got a great deal of agreement that a lot of times we see that. Strong preconceived notions that need to be overcome. Yes. People are calling it bigotry and prejudice and things like that. But we're going to give it the benefit of the doubt and just say that that's something somebody is ignorant on and they need to be overcome, right? Yes. It is true, Hussein and others are saying sometimes the strong preconceived notion is personal experience with the specific participants or similar ones. Hussein, you're so right. Sometimes the preconceived notion, the problem that we're having, is the participants have personal experience with the specific other participants, they know them from before, or similar ones, people from the same group, from the same, maybe the same organization, maybe the same, people, ethnic group or religious group, but they're fairly certain that they know all about them because of personal experience with this type or this person. Yeah. Well, let's do this person first, right? I've seen that. Sometimes you have a group that is kind of involuntary. It's done by level of employment, for example. Yeah. And they're kind of thrown together as a group to either learn something, like a workshop and a seminar. I see that lots. Or to resolve some sort of, maybe an internal, an employee dispute of some sort, employee change in the rules, for example, or maybe to deal with some outsider that is, outside group that is having an opposite opinion. Yeah. So they've been thrown together, and you've got some people that know each other primarily from being thrown together before because they're the same level. And they've got real ideas about whether or not they can work together. And if it's a problem, the answer is no, right? Yeah, because it didn't work the last time. New leader, I make it very clear. We divide up into smaller teams, breaking that up. Because you can't force it. You've got to get them away from each other. If you've got more than one group going, for example, it's a workshop or a seminar or something like that, you can shift the attendees and make for a better group dynamic. Yeah, sometimes I have that. Sometimes I'm doing a series and different people are coming on different days. Well, yeah, you can switch that around. You should do it right away. You can tell. People are saying, how do you know fast enough? The answer is, if you've got that and it's personal experience, you can tell by the group dynamic when you walk in the room, right? You can tell by the way they relate to each other. And I actually am not a very subtle person. I actually sort that out right away. It's like, wait, we're going to sort this out now. We're going to find out what it is that is the problem here, and we're going to find a solution before we go any further, right? I say that right up front. I really do. I don't let it fester. You can tell by the body language, by the relationship between the people, by the tone of voice. You can do it either in front of, if people ask me how to do this, you can do it either in front of everyone, kind of peer pressure, or, which is my personal preference, because usually this is a group that's going to see each other again, not in the group, for example, in business, right? Or maybe even outside of business, if it's some sort of an organization or something. But people run in the same circles. My personal preference is to call a timeout. Remember, that's why the food is there, right? Those of you who've been here before, the food is, Recipe for Peace now advocates having food in the room like a potluck, right? The reason that it's there, and you guys have heard me say this, and welcome to the new people, welcome to everybody. Thank you all for being here, for all your participation. The food is there as a tool so that we can call a time out. Let's taste this. Let's look at this. It's done. You know, let's have a snack. So that we can keep people in the room and the leader, which is us, can sort out privately, not in front of the whole group, what's going on with these people. Sometimes it's just two of them. Sometimes there's a little group. What's going on? What needs to be done? What's happening here? Yeah. So then you can find out what it is, right? Yeah. And Hussein says, as Hussein and other people are agreeing, sometimes it's personal. I once had more than once. I've had people who have been lovers and spouses and stuff and are no longer thrown into the group together. This is the part where you read in the Riot Act about their job, right? And you keep them on opposite sides and you make smaller groups, smaller teams to report in. Yeah. And you remember it. But they've got to act like grown-ups. Everybody does. You've got power if it's a work thing, because they want to keep their job and they're required to be there. And you can, this is true. People are saying you can go above their head. It's true, really. You can report them to someone in charge who's made the group, right, and required them to be there, right? Or, as I would prefer to do, because they will have animosity no matter what. And if I've got one that's going for just plain bigot because he doesn't like somebody in the room, more than once, like it's a, usually it's a training thing, if I'm doing it more than once, I will make one of them go to the next one, right? Separate them, get them out of the room. So that's an easy solution. If you cannot do that, you must read them the Riot Act about being adults, putting aside their issue. This one, for this particular group, and going on. But you keep in the back of your mind and make sure you're not getting sabotaged, because that could happen. Yeah. So you want to keep it in the back of your mind, but we're going to control it. And that's where the civility rules come in too, right? We will not be rude to each other is the basic civility rule. And we enforce it right away. If you let people get away with being awful to each other, there will be no end to it, right? You've got to enforce civility, enforce we will act like adults, enforce we're all working together right off. It'll fester, it'll get worse. You can't ignore it the first time it happens. You must stomp on it the first time it happens. You're the leader, right? Right, yeah. And now we've got the kind of preconceived notion that Hussein and Alex and others are talking about, where it's not personal experience with either the specific participants or the type of participant, right? And sometimes the type is a work type. I can't explain, like a level, a supervisor type. It's not just bigotry about something about the person. Well, it is about the person, but the thing about them might even be their employment level, right? And so you've got to get to that too. So what that sometimes, as Alex and Hussein and others are saying, the preconceived notion is what Alex is calling an ingrained opinion taught by respected third-party leaders. An ingrained opinion taught by respected third-party leaders. Yeah. This is something that's not personal experience. I know somebody, actually still know them, not friends, that says as the precursor to the most outrageous statements, everybody knows that. Fill in the blank. Well, everybody does not know that. Now, I don't know where on earth you got it, but somebody taught it to you because you have not had that through experience. You haven't. This is just something you've come in with as one of those, the world is round, or the world is flat in your case, opinions. Yeah, it's kind of one of those, well, we can't do that because everybody knows. No, yeah. When you're faced with that, I think I take them aside first, and we try to modify that opinion by reasoning, right? Even in front of the group, we try to reason with that. Sometimes, yeah, you guys have tried it, right? Sometimes that works. And I explain that although you might have that opinion given to you from, well, your family, your culture, your religion, your respected third-party opinion giver, right? And it's gotten kind of ingrained. You'd be surprised what people think. Oh, my God. We're going to keep that in the back, because you can't change them completely. It's not your job. But we're going to modify it or set it aside for this specific moment, for these specific issues, for this specific group. Right? Yeah. Does that work? People are asking if that works. Sometimes. I'm going to be honest about it. Sometimes. Depends, first of all, what the opinion, what the preconceived notion is, right? It depends if it really has applicability to this situation. Because sometimes you can reason it that way. Maybe, but that doesn't apply here, right? Think about it. It doesn't apply to this specific group. Oh, well, I guess so. See, that helps if it doesn't apply. Mm-hmm. We might, if it's really affecting the group dynamic, if more than one person perhaps has the preconceived notion, right, and it's getting infectious, could ask, yeah, people are advocating get rid of them as a group participant, right? Yeah. To ask them to leave. That is an option, but let's say that it's not an option, that you can't pick the group. You can't ask this person to leave. They are either very important to the outcome, and you can't alienate them. You can ask them to leave nice, but asking them to leave is asking them to leave, basically speaking. You can work it around so that it's their decision and they're still friends and will do whatever it is they need to do, but not with the group. Yeah. But if you cannot dismiss them because they're required to be there, right? They're part of the level that's supposed to be there. They're extremely important to the outcome. You can't alienate them. You're going to have to reason with them with the 5 W's. It'll work, yeah, because you get down to the bottom of it, and what you do is, even if you don't change their mind, you make them less of a threat in the group. Yeah, people are saying you make them feel foolish. Yes, but what you really make them do is turn them around so that they, in their mind, think, well, it's true most of the time, but in this specific group, maybe it's not true with these specific people. That's the best you can do with a really vicious preconceived notion that's really prejudice and bigotry and arrogance and 43 other words that people are using. Yeah. You can work them around so that they understand it's not here. Maybe everywhere, but not here. Yes, the five W questions. We use them all the time. It's very important. They're who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. Yeah, and you keep getting to the why. And then you explain that it's not this one, not these people. This is something that needs to be done during the timeout, probably. Right? Because the initial answers, if you've got a real bigot on your hands and they're just unreasonable and it's ingrained from their... God knows, it's ingrained from their childhood. I mean, really. You need to do this in private because the initial answers will be incredibly offensive to who, what, where, when, and why. And you've got to work them around to not here, not now, not this time. Right? Yeah. See, because you as leader are a good example, and you won't lose your cool. You won't lose your temper. Yeah. Who, what, where, when, and why? Gee, yeah. So that is something for a timeout. That is something for a little discussion about not here, not now, not in this spot, not in this place, not with these people. Right? Yeah. And it might take some reminding as we go along, depending on how long-term the group is, right? Yeah. So, who, what, where, when, and why? You need to get to the reason so that you can discuss it and modify it for the specific situation. Yeah, the question is the reason. People just say things, yeah, without thinking because they know that they're a universal truth. You got to get down to how come you think that's a universal truth? What's going on? Who, what, where, when, and why? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's another problem that we often see? This kind of goes with this because oftentimes they're hand in hand with the very strong preconceived notion. Mm-hmm. People try to bully. You ever see that bullying to get their way? Right? That's what a lot of this stuff is. You've got someone or some clique, some group within the group that has a definite idea and they don't want to listen to anybody else and they are bullying the other people. Mm-hmm. Yes. We're breaking out the civility rules right away. You know how I always say nothing is particularly written down with Recipe for Peace? Now it depends on the situation. Sometimes you have a group where you don't even need to state the civility rules. It's natural to them. They've got it. They're basically in agreement. They maybe even have dealt with each other before in a positive manner, right? And they just want to know how to proceed. They want to know how to get from idea to successful outcome. That's really what they need you for. They need you to guide them through the process so that they can get a successful outcome and then go on to their next project, right? Right. Fabulous. I love those kinds of groups. Most of the time, you get a group where not everybody is in sync when they start. They might want the same successful outcome, but they have to think about it. They have to deal with the other people. They have to be them. They have to assert some power, right? And they're going to try, somebody in that room is going to try to bully the other people. Especially if there's a perception, at least by the bully, that he or she, and sometimes, and frequently, just as much as he or she's, really, that it's an equal opportunity personality flaw, especially if there's a perception of weakness in the other participants. They think the bully thinks that they are stronger, more right, and more, like, entitled. Does that make sense? Yeah. This happens. Sometimes there's a difference in level of experience among the participants. Sometimes there's a difference, in education. People going for education, yeah. Some people seem more important because they're like an expert. They've got a bunch of degrees. Hell, I've got 2 doctorate degrees, and I don't think I'm an expert in much of anything except people, right? Right. Which is not what I went to school for. Yeah. So, but some people are very self-important, right? You can't even see why they're so self-important, but they are. And this is the civility rules, and you might have to actually state them. You might have to write them down. You might have to it depends. The civility rules exist to be useful. And basically speaking, at their core, they say we will not be rude to each other. We will treat everyone with respect and as equals in the team, right? Because we all have something to contribute. Now, some people may have more expertise. Do they contribute more? I suppose they do. But civility rules, we're not going to lord it over everybody, right? Right. The civility rules must be stated in these types of groups, and they must be enforced from the beginning. I can't stress that enough. If you let the group dynamic slide because you hope it's a one-shot bullying, it won't be. It will encourage this person to become more and more obnoxious because they'll keep pushing. And it's going to be hard to enforce the civility rules in the middle when you've had it, so to speak. When you see it, enforce them so that they are equal to everyone and not against someone. Do you understand? Equal. Yeah, that's the idea. Everybody's equal in the group dynamic, which means everybody takes turns speaking. Uh-huh. Yeah, if you want to hear more about this, the prior shows are archived on recipeforpeacenow.com. And we've done whole shows on this because it's so important to get that right away and to not let it take hold of the group dynamic. Yes, bullying is a real problem that you must get a hold of, that you must take control of with immediacy. Yeah. You need to really get it done, right? Yeah. And it's very, very... one of the ways we do it is we enforce time for speaking because bullies try to take the floor. I know that you guys are advocates of things like whistles and holding up plaques, signs and stuff. I'm an advocate of, thank you. A lot of you have changed. You all go, no, we're using what you do. You use the timer. Yes, I do. I like to use an actual kitchen timer because it tick, tick, ticks and then goes ding, and everybody knows they've had their fair time for speaking, right? I enforce the no bad body language rule, right? Yes, and I call people on it right away. And I, as leader, am always the good example, right? Yeah. Yeah, yes. Janul and others are talking about having a private discussion during the timeout. Yes, that's my first shot. My first shot is always the private discussion, in the hopes that the person doesn't know it and isn't really bullying, just It's their personality. Some people have a very strong personality. I actually, when I'm in a group, I have to remember not to hog the conversation, right? And to let everybody speak and to listen. Because I don't bully people, but it is I'm very extroverted, right? And there's people in the back who everybody needs to be quiet and turn towards so they can talk. Yeah, because they need their turn. I do that as a leader. I make people take a turn. I say, and what do you think, Janul and others? Yeah, what do you think? What's your opinion about this, right? Bring them out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a private discussion first. Yes, that's what the timeouts are for. Mm-hmm. Yes, Alejandro and others are saying oftentimes you can appeal to a superior and they can get them to calm down. Why not? It might not even be a work situation. They might have somebody who sent them to the group as a representative, an organization, a group. Somebody sent them, they're the rep. You need to appeal to their superior, report the bad behavior, so to speak. Have them perhaps have a three-way, come and have a cup of coffee together and discuss that although we're very grateful for your input, you've got to let other people have their say too. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to all think about all the aspects, right? Yeah? Yeah, appeal to a superior, have a little talk, so to speak. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Barbara and others are talking about peer pressure. Sometimes that'll work, especially peer pressure in the room, right? Depending on the status of the other people, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes people just like being a bully but it is put down if the other people won't go along, right? That's peer pressure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'm big on enlisting help if I've got help, a superior, a peer, just talking to the person, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe we can have a secret. I actually have had people who have come from cultures that when they're plopped down into a different area, seem like they're bullying because it's the way they do business wherever they came from, but they don't really mean it. It's just the way they've been trained. Does that make sense? It's kind of weird, but I see this occasionally, not only with other cultures from other countries, because sometimes, especially in cultures where women are not business people, and there's quite a few women in the group, and somebody comes from that kind of a culture, and they are a man, and they've been in business, you get the condescending. Does that make sense? Yeah. Now, let's just do it my way type thing. Is that bullying? Yes, it is. But it's kind of an experience of being in charge and of not understanding the value of the other people in the room. That's for a private timeout discussion. It really is. I actually have people that I deal with somewhat in different situations. You know how you have the same kind of clients. And there are several men who come from those kinds of cultures. One of them actually comes from the South, deep South in the United States, which is a whole different kettle of fish, I swear. And he speaks very loudly and very fast and very kind of leans forward body language. I say, you know what I mean? And he and I and several other people too who come from different cultures, we've got kind of a secret symbol, signal between us, because they don't realize they're doing it. As it's building up, I give them the secret signal, and they go, oops, and they kind of curtail it and sit back down. Yeah, it's sometimes it's the weirdest thing. Sometimes it's deliberate, but sometimes it's so ingrained as a personality trait, kind of, that we need a secret signal we're heating up. Just calm down. You're scaring the others. Is what it really is. And I tell them this. I say, you know, you're scaring the other participants. Just, you know, be calm. Take your turn and then try to look interested. Yeah, it's weird, but sometimes something that really looks like bullying. Yeah, people are saying it's a form of bullying. I suppose it is, but it's the most controllable one. There you go. Yeah. So what other problems do we have? Oops. I'm going to call this lack of understanding because we've got lots of participants. Thank you all for being here. Fabulous. Thank you for participating. Thank you for all of your opinions. And I'm kind of grouping all kinds of comments into different areas so that we can talk about them as a group. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm going to call this lack of understanding. Siham says, sometimes you've got the problem of the instructions being unclear. Yeah, or at least not understood, right? Dorothy and others are talking about obstacles when they go to complete the task. Seems like it's clear. This seems straightforward. But when you go to do it, it's not as clear, it's not as straightforward as it seems. There's something about it that's not quite, yeah? Uh-huh. Yeah, Matthew and others are saying that the participants think that they understand and that they're on the right track, but then they hit one of those obstacles or it becomes unclear, right? Yeah, because you give people a task and they go off to do it and they've heard you and they're sincere and they're giving it their best shot, but what they understood from the instructions might not be what you meant. Or when they go to do it, there's unforeseen consequences, unforeseen problems that they didn't realize when they started. Uh-huh. And they think they understand what they do, but they're not quite up to the task. They're unsure. This is all unsureness, right? Yeah. So what do? This is easily remedied, and you must do it, because people shake their head yes, and they mean yes. They're not playing with you. They mean yes. They really do. But when they get down to it, they either forget, they're not clear on it. You know, I always think about it as like computer instructions, right? There's steps. And I guess I think about it this way, because sometimes when I go to use some sort of a computer program that I have never used before, or I haven't used in a really long time, I got it. I understand what to do. I've opened it up. It's there. But I'm not real intuitive about it. And I wrote down the steps. But somewhere along the line, there's something that needs to be clicked that I don't remember, that was so obvious that someone didn't say it to me. It's an obstacle, and I don't know what to do. And if I click on something wrong, I make it worse, right? And I don't know how to get out. I know someone has shown me the escape key now. But but that's not the answer either, because I don't get forward. I undo, but I don't do, right? I'm not getting there. And then people say, you know, just push enter. And I'm like, really? Darn it. Yeah, it's something simple, but I'm stuck. It was unclear, not obvious. when I got into it, it was not what I exactly as I thought it was going to be. Little boxes have appeared on my screen, and I don't know to click do it or not do it, right? Yeah, those little message boxes. And I go, oh, my God, I don't know. I thought I understood. I thought I was on the right track, but now I don't know what to do. The way to remedy, I don't know what to do, instructions were unclear now that I've gotten into them, is to be open to ask questions of. Right, yes. Be open to questions. Make it very clear that you can ask questions as you go along. Ask questions of your teammates. Ask questions of me, the leader. You can't be afraid to ask questions or think that it means that people will think you're stupid. Better to ask the question and go forward than to do something sideways, right? And to know that things are okay, right? You want to check in regularly and have progress reports. Yeah. Don't just wait until they're supposed to report to the whole group and it's kind of like, oh, my God, you didn't do anything. Well, I got stuck. Well, ask somebody how to get unstuck, right? Yeah. Frequent progress reports so that we know that everybody's chugging along and nobody's gotten stuck and they don't know what to do and they were too embarrassed to ask. There's no embarrassment in asking questions. I say that right up front, right? Yeah. So what are the other kinds of problems we commonly see? Mm-hmm. I'm going to say this is the problem with outside influencers, right? Yeah. We've got outsiders that are causing problems inside our group. Carol and others are talking about adverse groups arguing for other solutions, right? Or maybe they're arguing to keep the status quo. I mean, we might be doing that too. And they are adverse to us. And they are, well, they're kind of fighting us, right? Media-wise, funding-wise, hearts and souls-wise, yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we want to be the way that is successful, that comes on top, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, Nico and others are making a real good point about that. Because we think only about the adverse groups as being kind of to watch out for and see what they're doing and like that. But a lot of times, we're on the same side. Nico says the same side, but worried about losing present position and influence. Yes. Groups that look like we should get together and pool our resources. The old expression, bit more is better than... A bigger group is better than a smaller group because it has more power, right? They look like they're on our side. They look like, yeah, let's get together. Let's form a bigger group, a bigger entity. Let's do this. But they've got a leader, and they've got people in place. And that leader and those people don't want to lose their position and their influence and their leadership and their power, right? And you have to understand that. You have to understand somebody else's position, that it's a really bad thing to not be in charge anymore. I liked it, right? I don't want to make a bigger group. I want to keep mine because I'm important in it, right? And you have to move importance over. Is the key to it. And not just be the, now I'm the leader. Well, no, now we lead together, right? Yeah. Oh, all right. People are saying that for the good of the cause, you might even relinquish your leadership if it's important enough. Yeah? I've done that. I don't have a real, in fact, sometimes if it's like a volunteer thing, you're on the board or something, or you're getting it together because, well, somebody asked you to, you truly believe in the cause, it'd be kind of nice not to be the leader anymore, right? Yeah, it's got time and effort and funding, as we talked about at the beginning. Yeah, so this is good. Yeah, it depends. But you have to remember that people don't like to lose their spot. Yeah. And Beth and others are talking about the leaders and influencers controlling the participants, the third party. I like to call them the invisible third party because they kind of are. Sometimes you have participants who report back to someone. Officially, unofficially, but they're reporting back and the someone has a great deal of influence. This means that they truly need to be accommodated and you need to break out the 5 W's maybe. Because you can see that someone has changed their position from the last time and you need to know why. Yeah, who, what, where, when, and why. Yeah, because you might have a third party in the room who you can't see, they're invisible, but they are influencing your participants greatly, right? Because when they report back, they want to report back what the influencer wanted. Got to know what that is. Got to find out why. Who, what, where, when, and why. We're going to not make it to the recipes again. Yes. One of the other problems that we have, and thank you all for all of your participation, thank you for being here, is I'm going to call it team conflict, right? Team conflict, yeah. The team's not working, they're not working well with others. Rachel and others are talking about personal and professional dislike or differences, we'll call it differences. Yeah, the team is just not making it. We talked about that for the whole group. But sometimes the teams are put together before people have formed their dislike. This is a job for a private conversation between the people who are having the conflict, right? Yeah, between the leader and the people having the conflict. Yeah, so we can work out our differences. We might have to shift teams somewhat. This may have to be done all across the board as kind of an exercise in team building. You make the speech because if you don't want one team to have to take a troublemaker, a perceived one at least. Yeah, it'll make the team bristly. You might have to make a switch, kind of a new teams type thing. Yes. Suki and others are making a very good point. That sometimes team conflict is not conflict at all. Sometimes the people are too similar and they see only one solution. Good point. The team is really, really in accord, but they're not looking around. They're not researching. They just know that that's the way it's going to be, that that's the way it should be, right? And so they are not really, they're not looking outside the box. They're not thinking about it. And a lot of times when you've got that, it's really a bad thing because they've decided that it won't work. Yeah, whatever it is not, it's not going to work. That's their agreement, so to speak. Well, that's bad. We need to have them do some research and we need to shift around and separate the teams out and do maybe research as a whole group, right? Yeah, because defeat's not in our nature. And even if the original outcome cannot at this moment be achieved, we can get closer, right? We can take a step closer, yeah. Yeah. Kalik and others are talking about the fact that on teams, some participants fully participate and some of them don't. They're kind of being carried by the worker bees, right? Yeah. And that's something that as a leader, you and as a person who is open to questions and reports of progress and like that, that's something that you can be told. And what you will do is you will have a little discussion with this person. You will find out why. Maybe they just don't understand the instructions, right? And you will enlist help. peer pressure, superior, yeah, whoever sent them, yeah. You want to know the who, what, where, when, and why for a thing like that. And sometimes people are kind of, well, I'm going to call them being obstinate. And you want to know if it's because of a lack of good faith, right? Are they trying to derail the process? Derail the team? Yeah, you need to know that. And that's where the who, what, where, when, and why comes in. Yeah. I'm very big on the five W's. And you can ask them in private first. You can decide. You know, it depends on the group. It depends somewhat on your leadership style. But you've got to get down to the bottom of it right away so that it doesn't take hold is the key. Yeah, that's the key to it. Well, my friends, as we sometimes do, we've run out of time for the recipes because we've had such a fabulous discussion. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for all of your ideas and for listening. If you would like to, and please come again, if you would like to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Our website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. If you would like to hear prior shows, yes, I forgot to say the prior shows, you're right. Thank you for telling me. Fabulous. A lot of people who've been here many times, well, you didn't talk about the prior shows, you're right. Prior shows are archived on that website, peacefortheearth.com. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.